The following is a special presentation of Alpha Media. Welcome to Beyond the Headlines. In-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. Now, here's your host, Brett Recap.
Thank you so much and welcome in to the 368th edition of Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of the stories making news here in the Pacific Northwest as we move through this month of April 2021 on all seven of our Alpha Media Portland radio stations, including FM News 101. Yeah, we have another special show for you this week, and if you like fiction thrillers or mystery novels, you're in for a big treat. I had a chance to catch up with one of my friends and colleagues in the media business, author Dana Haynes of DanaHaynesMystery.com. That's where you go to learn more about his now 8 published books. His 9th is already in the hands of his publisher. Now, Dana Haynes has been around Portland for a very long time. He's been the spokesman for one of our Portland mayors and is now the editor of the Portland Tribune. My broadcast partner, Veronica Carter, and I have Dana on every Thursday morning at 6:19 and 8:19 on Portland's Morning News on KXL. And I'll be honest, I didn't even know Dana wrote books until recently. And man, am I glad I found that out, because now I'm into his newest series, St. Nicholas, Salvage and Wrecking, and Sirocco. These are fiction novels featuring two super interesting main characters in situations around the world that are just a blast to read. So if you do like reading at all and are looking for something good, go to DanaHaynesMystery.com, visit your local independent bookstore around Portland, and pick up a Dana Haynes novel. I can tell you in no uncertain terms, you'll love it. And by the way, I am not financially compensated in any way for saying that. I am just a fan. So pull up DanaHaynesMystery.com, get a nice cup of joe maybe, sit back and enjoy my conversation with Portland-based author Dana Haynes, who starts out our conversation by telling me what got him started writing.
Well, my dad was a huge fan, especially of mysteries and thrillers, The County of Monte Cristo, Jane Grey novels, Beau Geste, those sorts of things. So growing up, we were taught to really love this medium. And stupidly, I tried to write my very first novel when I was still a college student at Clackamas Community College in Oregon City, and by sheer dumb luck, got it published. So I got my first mysteries at Bantam Books, published when I was too darn young to know what the hell I was doing. Then had quite a bit of a long dry spell after that, and then came back in the 2000s with the 4 books that were at St. Martin's Press, and now I'm with Blackstone Publishing.
That's fantastic. And have you always been drawn to the action and the thriller and those type of fiction novels, or does it run the gamut?
I'll be honest with you. I'm my first reader. I only write books that I want to read because I get really excited about them. I find myself thinking, oh man, I put my hero in a bad place yesterday. I wonder how the heck he's going to get out of it. And the excitement I get from trying to write a book that I would read is how I keep the energy going during the 400-page process. So I only really write mysteries and thrillers. My pivot foot is still in the mystery world. These are technically thrillers these days, but this is my genre and I just love it.
I have so much to get into. I'm really fascinated by the process and I really want to hear it from the ground up, where you get ideas and how you do research and everything like that. But let's start with your books and your career. I'm reading your latest novel, which is Sirocco. Am I saying that right, Dana? Sirocco?
Yes.
Okay, Sirocco. And I read the St. Nicholas Salvage and Wrecking series. This is part 2 of that series, so it's brand new, these two characters. I devoured this thing a couple weeks ago when I was on vacation at the coast. And, when you get in that mode, you have plenty of time to read. And I'm working my way through this new one. Tell us about all your books and how you got to where we are here in 2021 with this new series.
Well, the new series was something I really, really wanted to try, and there are 2 elements of it that I really like. And then the one, through my journalism research, I found out that the International Criminal Court has got judges and lawyers and clerks and researchers, but it doesn't have cops. There is no law enforcement element to the International Criminal Court. So I got to thinking, well, wouldn't it be interesting if somebody had the job of finding the worst of the world's worst, kidnapping them and taking them to the court and dropping them off with a red bow tied around them? So I thought, okay, so that's a good premise. That seems like something to lend itself to a bunch of stories. And then the second thing I wanted is 2 co-equal protagonists, a man and a woman, who are not love interests. They're friends. They have different skill sets. They come from different backgrounds. They're buddies. And I just never saw that before in a mystery or a thriller novel. That idea that they are co-equal heroes and that they have more or less the same number of lines, and neither one is a sidekick. I just hadn't seen that before either. So that was the beginning of this one. So I was really excited to try and take those two concepts and see if they wouldn't lend themselves. And so far, I got to tell you, these books kind of write themselves. They're a heck of a lot of fun.
Really? Really? I mean, when you get into the action and the storyline itself, you're saying it's easy to write for these two characters?
Yes, very much so. Michael Finnegan is an ex-New York cop, very by-the-book kind of guy. Kathleen Fierro Dejar, she's Spanish and Algerian. She's been a soldier, a spy, and an assassin for king and country. Michael's very much by the book. She believes that there is no book. And so they come from very different skill sets and different ways of getting to where they want to be. And I found that their dialogue kind of, if I shut up and get out of the way and don't interfere, their dialogue is kind of writes itself. I'm having a lot of fun with the interaction of those two characters. So yeah, this one has been, you know, some books are a slog. Some books you find yourself thinking, you know, I got to get dressed for work. I got to empty the cat box. I got to write chapter 17. This one hadn't been like this. This one's just been a blast.
Well, that's what makes a great read. You really don't want to put a good book down. I mean, if you're having fun, you're watching a movie in your head while you're watching these characters. And Michael Finnegan, and really you call her Fierro, she's a badass and she's attractive and she has long legs and dark skin, and she comes from the I'd just as soon kick you in the face than talk with you kind of vibe. And then Patrick Finnegan, who you call Finnegan really throughout much of your books, he's a former cop, like you mentioned, and a cop's cop, and he has a totally different personality. So did you do that by design, make these characters like total opposites, yet you call them partners throughout?
Yep, very much so. I wanted them to have very different skill sets. And so when it comes to investigating things, Michael's the guy. Finnegan really knows how to investigate. He's a very, very good cop. And when it comes to kicking in doors, it's Fierro. She's much more the soldier, much more the gun enthusiast. And so they have just this vastly different skill set. They come at things so darn differently. And that was early on. And by the way, not for nothing, but you can tell I'm of a certain age where when I was a kid, I had this huge crush on Diana Rigg in the Avengers. You know, she wore the black leather and kicked ass, and then had mad crush on the Mazzy Blades comic strip. Awesome. I've always been attracted to the femme fatale character. That's baked into my DNA, I'm afraid. So, that's a lot of fun to write.
Nice. We're talking with Dana Haynes, author, and you can find him and his works at danamystery.com. And you can also find his books at all the good local spots. I bought mine at Annie Bloom, and you can go to Powell's and other places online. When you're advancing these characters and you get a hold of a series that you really enjoy, how long do you play this out? You have the second book of this series out so far. How long are you going to take Michael and Fierro into different areas of the world and different adventures?
Before I answer that question, let me thank you for going to independent bookstores and for promoting them. Annie Bloom's, Powell's. We have these great, great independent bookstores here in Portland, Oregon that just support the local writers to no end. I love these guys. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, happy
Ask
to.
Her how long I want. Yeah, how long I want to do this? Well, I finished the third book, and it's off to my literary agent has it, and she sent it on to the publisher. And this one's going to take place primarily in Venice. So that's really fun. And I'll be honest with you, writing mysteries for a publisher is a job. And so if they told me they wanted five more mysteries, I would salute smartly and find five more, because I'm the hired gun here. I will write as many of these as they want to put covers around. So, and as I say, I get to travel. I didn't even mention this yet. Katie King and I have gotten to travel to do the research for these books. So I went to Cyprus. I've gone to the former Yugoslavia. I've gone to France and Spain for those last two books. Venice, I've been to several times. We go and we can choreograph the fight scenes. Katie and I walk around and figure out exactly where Finnegan and Fierro enter and where the bad guys enter and what the scene looks like, which has been a phenomenal boon. It's been just a mitzvah that I've gotten to actually go and do that. So if they want 10 more of these books, I'm going to lace them up and get them.
That really brings me nicely into my next line of questioning here. And we're talking with Dana Haynes, author, is you're talking about other places of the world, and you're talking about government agencies and, I don't know, guns and food and all these specific things that you have to have some sort of reference to and about. You know, I had to get through a little bit, I'll be honest, on St. Nicholas Salvage and Wrecking. Had to get through a few of the foreign places and titles and backstory and so forth, and the who, what, when, where's before we could get into the action itself. You just kind of, you have to set the scene as an author, and then as a reader, you have to get through that, and then you almost just let the rest happen in a great way, which is why I'm enjoying Sirocco, your second book in this series, so much, because I'm already familiar with much of it. But when you go to these places, I mean, do you love all that? Do you love Europe and Cyprus? I mean, what made you go to other countries to create these characters?
I fell in love with the international mystery and thrillers of the 1970s, 1980s. Robert Ludlum used to write those books, The Bourne Identity, all those books. And there would always be these, you know, I was growing up in Idaho, and the farthest I'd ever traveled, you could throw a stone and hit it. And to read these scenes that took place in Austria and took place in France were just so intoxicating when I was a kid. So that's why I got started. Katie and I have traveled to Europe a lot. We're very fortunate about that. And my friend Tim and I did a driving tour through the former Yugoslavia, and I guess we hit five different countries there and did lots of research. Went to Cyprus, which is the last split country in the world. It's got the capital. It's just like Berlin used to be. There's a Turkish half and a Greek half. And you've got to go through the UN checkpoint to get to the other side of the capital. And for those of you who are like myself, who are geographically challenged, you always want to put a thriller in a place that has endemic thrills anyway, right? So Cyprus, which is in far eastern Mediterranean, has got Turkey to the north, Israel and Syria to the south, and Egypt to the south, and those are the two to the east. So it's surrounded by lots and lots of tension and turmoil. And so it makes for excellent, excellent place to try and set stories like this. And I did fall madly in love with Cyprus. Not for nothing, but it's Greek and Turkish, so you can't get a bad cup of coffee or a bad meal to save your soul on that island.
Yeah, and you like the food, don't you? you like the culture.
Yeah, no kidding.
It comes through. It comes through on the pages. Do you feel that?
Oh, I'm very much celebrating some of the places I've gotten to visit and travel. And if I can get people to fall in love with Spain or France or, I mean, even Bosnia-Herzegovina in one of my books, then, you know, more, that's great. That's awesome.
Well, that's part of your job, is to transport us, you know, move us into different places and put us there. And you talk about the Bourne Identity. My closest brush of fame is Matt Damon. Interviewed him a couple times. And also,
really?
Yeah. And Frank Marshall, his producer, who produced those films. And you mentioned the Idaho thing. I have time in Boise, Idaho. He has roots there. And so I got to do that a couple times. Which was neat, interview of those two. Who's Katie, by the way?
Katie King, my wife, she's worked for the state of Oregon. She's worked in the public health division. She is smarter than I am by a foot and a half, and she loves travel. She's also a writer. So it's really, really lovely to have somebody who understands the weirdnesses of being a writer and who gets the good days and the bad days of being a writer. She understands them really well. And she and I, before the pandemic, we tried to travel every year. And our rule was we would spend 11 and a half months eating ramen and living in an apartment that we rent and living as cheap as possible with one car. And then once a year, we would take all of our money and go to Europe. So once the pandemic's passed, God willing, we're going to do it again.
That sounds good. So you must bounce ideas off of her. I'm really interested in how you settle on describing a scene. You've been to these places. You've soaked them in. You've made notes. You do research. How do you translate that and know exactly how to describe a scene and set the scene for a reader and make them feel like they're right there without, you know, maybe the fewest words possible? I don't know. How do you settle on that?
I don't know that there's an answer to that, because I have often done it badly. I will go back and look at a book and realize that I gave three paragraphs to describe something I should have done in three sentences, and vice versa. One thing I do in first drafts, I put the word scripto in brackets in the book, and I say they entered the bar scripto. And what that means is later in the second draft, I'm going to describe what that bar looks like. I don't have to do it in the first draft. I think it's really, really important to finish the book, to move forward as fast as possible. And I can finish a 400-page book in about 3 months. Then I go back in the second draft and say, you know, I never did describe what that bar looked like. Remember to go find, you know, describe that. I never said what that car was. Go describe that. So I try and layer all that stuff in later. And then I try and just say, did I describe it too much? Did I describe it too little? As you say, can I cut some words out? Can I add a couple of quicker descriptos to describe it? Do I always hit it on the mark? Boy, I sure try, but I'm not sure that I do.
Yeah, that's great. You were talking about process, and I really want to hear that from you. I'm Brett Rekamp, and you're listening to Beyond the Headlines here. It's a special conversation with Dana Haynes. DanaHaynesMystery.com is where you can go and check out his works. He is an accomplished novelist at this point. When you talk about the process, that's really fascinating. You say about 3 months. I'm really curious as to how you get that stuff on the paper, get that first draft, get that second draft and third draft, and you work with your publisher and your editor. Can you give us a little backstory and bring us behind the curtain there about process for writing a good novel?
I have a crazy system. I grew up in newsrooms. I've been a newspaper guy all my life, and I'm used to writing with a notepad and a pencil. So I do my first drafts in a steno pad. I wake up in the morning and I write a couple of scenes and think it's pretty good. Then I, you know, grab a shower, put on some nice clothes, go and do my day job, which is editing at the Portland Tribune. Then I come home in the evening and I take that stuff that I wrote longhand and I translate it in my computer. So I'm using my creative half of my brain in the morning and my analytic half in the afternoon. And I can say to myself, well, you know, that was pretty good. That's really good. I've moved the plot forward. I've used the character development forward. I've done a reveal for a major clue. Or I can say, wow, that was terrible this morning. That stuff's dreadful. Get rid of it. Didn't do at all what you needed to do. But I have 12 hours between those two. So I can analyze it and say, yep, that worked. Or nope, that didn't work. Scratch it. Try it again. And because of that, I can move along pretty quickly.
That's really interesting. You do it longhand first off, huh?
Yep, I sure do. And my handwriting is so horrible. I have had those times where I've looked at a note for an hour and said, I have no idea what the heck I wrote here. No theory.
Big picture, though, from a story, how do you get these ideas, you know, about the main message of a book or, you know, the big picture? How do you get those big picture ideas?
I'm a former theater geek. I did theater in college and also a community theater. And so I write in three-act structure, act one, act two, and act three. And I always know what gets me out of act one and what more or less is going to get me out of act two. But I don't know how the books end until I'm deeply into them. I don't plot very well. I don't outline. I basically come up with a fun concept, a concept that I think is going to entertain me as the first reader for 400 pages. And then I think, okay, well, how can I weave that concept? And sometimes it's character driven. Sometimes in the second book, there's a character that I really, really wanted to put in this book, in a book. And she's been living in my head for a long, long period of time. I thought, okay, this is the time I'm finally going to get to use her. And then in the book before that, it was much more plot driven. It was the young people who were being forced to immigrate out of the Middle East and they were flooding into Europe at the time. And there was some really, really bad things happening to them. So that was the storyline and an element that seemed really interesting. So that one was plot driven. Second one was more character driven. And I am, because I'm not a plotter, I'm one of those guys who will say, you know, the last 40 pages aren't working. I'm going to throw them out and start over again. And I'll push back and say, yep, nope, I'm off the beam. I'm not there. And when I am on the beam, the stories come like this. The pages just flow. And you think, okay, that's the story. Now you're back on it. So I don't mind throwing away 3, 4, 5 chapters if I think they've gotten off the beam.
How much fun is that? Do you lose track of time completely and you get lost when you're really on a roll?
Well, let me put it to you this way. I worked my way through college as a janitor at a Datsun dealership. For your younger listeners, Datsun, think Nissan.
Right.
I always like to remind myself that the absolute worst day I ever had as a writer was much better than the best day I ever had as a janitor at a Datsun dealership. So that perspective helps a great deal. And I'm loving it. I have so much fun. It is my hobby. It's the thing I do to relax. I keep the notepad in a messenger bag with me all the time. So if I'm sitting at the dentist's office and I got 15 minutes, I can pull out that notepad and work on that scene and nudge things around. And it is more fun than I can say. I'm just having a blast.
That's awesome. Dana Haynes is with us of DanaHaynesMystery.com, accomplished author, most recently of Sirocco and also St. Nicholas Salvage and Wrecking. I'm Brett Rekamp. Remind me to ask about your compensation before we get done here. But as we talk about these characters and the main partners of this group are, of course, Michael Patrick Finnegan and Caitlin Fierro Dahar. We just pretty much call them either Michael or Finnegan, and then Fierro for the most part. But these other characters, be it your villains or Ways and Means, who's a banker, or some of these side characters, do you have a heck of a lot of fun with some of them?
Oh my gosh, I haven't had a lot of fun done with the ancillary characters on these two books. I really, truly have. There, it's been such a blast to put my Finnegan and Fierro in this weird world and to surround them by, as Finnegan keeps saying, we got to get a better class of friends. They've got a gang of thieves who help them. They've got a corrupt German banker who helps them. They've got a Scottish mercenary who can provide them with thugs if they need them. Michael's very, you know, very, very by the book kind of guy. So he has to adapt to this weird world that he's living in. So that I'm having a lot of fun with that. Then the other thing I really wanted to do was both of these characters have become isolated from their families. Michael's dad was a cop. His sister's a cop. His uncles were cops. His grandfather. And he's out of it now because he found out his father was corrupt. And meanwhile, Fierro grew up very liberal and very rich in Spain. And she crewed yachts and she competed in the biathlon, the Olympics. And so when she joined the army and became a soldier, she was isolated from her family. So the other element I get to do, and really I got it, the second book focused on Fierro and their weird world coming into contact with her family and how that's going to impact her. And then the third book, which I just finished, it's about Michael and his dad and coming into and trying to bring his family into his world. So that's the other element that I'm having an awful lot of fun with.
And how do you go from storyline to storyline? I mean, sometimes, like in your first book, St. Nicholas, Salvage and Wrecking, they merged. We had a journalist who ended up, and part of the problem there was we had human traffickers, and that's what our two partners were dealing with. But you had a storyline there, but they kind of merged towards the end of the book and in the climax. But you also have backstories. You mentioned Finnegan and his dad's in trouble. It turns out that he's a dirty cop. And then you'll switch locations and storylines, and sometimes they don't have anything to do with each other, at least you don't think, and sometimes they do tie themselves together. How do you switch from place to place and storyline to storyline?
I try and figure out the A story, which is the one that's on the back of the book, right? And it's the primary story. And then the B story will quite often be something about their families. And then sometimes a C story that you have to worry about too. And you try and thread them together and bring them together. The reason I introduced the journalist who was traveling with the children from Syria into Europe was because I definitely did not want to do a book in which there were child victims. I wanted to do a book about children who help rescue themselves. And this journalist who's not a victim, she helps rescue these kids too. I wanted to make sure it was not that kind of story. I wanted them to have some element of saving themselves. There's heroism in this young boy who's on that trip. And there's heroism on this young journalist from England who's found herself accidentally accompanying them. And that was very much as important to me as the bang, bang, shoot 'em up gun elements too. So for that one, that was something I really, really wanted to work with.
Yeah. So how much of yourself do you put in each of your books? You just mentioned how you had a line and that would be just a personal decision on your own part. You didn't want a child exploited specifically as far as a character. But how much of your own values, your own experience, and yourself do you put into these books? And or do you throw some of that out as a fictional author?
Well, two things to know about me. One is that I'm a complete coward, and I actually passed out getting a flu shot recently. So, I mean, there's none of me in the action heroics stuff. I once skipped a day of work because I had a hangnail. But on the other hand, my values I get to put in these books. My characters maintain my values. And look, I grew up, you know, as a journalist in Oregon, and the first governor I covered was Governor Roberts, and the current governor I covered is Governor Brown. So I have no problem with writing about women in power who have their own agency and who take charge and get stuff done. That's very much a part of the Oregon story. We can't write about politics in Oregon, but not writing about strong female characters. So I've been blended into that notion for years. So all of my books have strong female characters because my life has strong female characters.
How about some of the humor? I mean, I know for a fact that people reading this are laughing at times, and that really fills you up as you're consuming these books, and every once in a while, and I think I can say this on the radio, you know, bitch, please. And that, you know, that's just like, these people are being real. When you have zingers of humor, do those come naturally, and do you really enjoy those moments?
I do, and I really try and leaven these stories because they're bad things are happening to good people. I mean, you can't write a mystery or a thriller without some spilled blood in it. And, you know, if you look at it too carefully, that's a little bit dreadful. So my books always have some element of humor that slides around and tries to leaven the desperate situation going on. And I really work very hard on that to make sure that that's in there. And I love the other authors who do that. There are some authors, Robert Cray, C-R-A-I-S, his stuff can be horrific and funny in the same page. Lee Child can do that. There are some, Meg Gardner is really good at that. Some of my absolute favorite mystery writers really know how to leaven all of their stories like that. So you bet, I try that. I try real hard on that.
All right. I wanted you to remind me to ask you about your compensation as we visit with Dana Haynes, and Dana Haynes Mystery .com is where you can go to check out his stuff. When is this going to be your full-time day job?
I don't know too many people who do this full-time. I really don't. And one of the reasons is it's just an unstable industry. Between my third book and my fourth book of the nine that I've had published, I had 15 years that I sold nothing. So if I'd have been trying to pay the rent during that time, I'd have been a sad, sad guy. Most people I know have day jobs. And secondly, I have a day job that I absolutely love. The Portland Tribune is a great place to work. I love my crew. They have risen to this pandemic in ways that I never could have imagined. We had layoffs a year ago and the rest of us went to furlough. And I thought, this is going to be terrible. I don't know what to do. So I set up daily staff meetings. Every day at 10 o'clock, my staff meets. And you know what? They've blossomed and they've worked really, really well. And they're making the most of this time and they're writing great journalism. I'm so, so proud of the work they do. And so my day job is something I absolutely love. I'll tell you honestly, and tell your readers or your listeners this. When I was 20, I either wanted to be a journalist or a novelist. And I've got pretty good gray hair now, and I'm both. I'm the luckiest guy I ever met.
Bravo. I found my vocation early too. And the idea is you find something you love and do it for a very long time. We're talking with Dana Haynes. We're just about out of time. I want to ask a couple of quick questions here for you. You touched on the nine published books, so you can go to your website and check those out. A few tips for people who think they might want to be a writer, and what is the difference between what you are and what some other novelists might be, and then the big writers? Is it just straight up getting a screenplay for a big movie? How do you make it into the big time?
Well, my advice for writers is this. Write a book that you love. Do not try and write what's hot. If you go to a bookstore and say, I don't know what the hot genre is because I want to write that, you're going to be spending the next year or year and a half or 2 years in something that you don't particularly care about. So go find a genre that you absolutely love and write the best book you can write and love what you're doing and be your first reader. Second bit of advice for writers is if you can't fix it if it's not on paper, get the first draft done. You can go back and clean it up later. Your first draft should look terrible. If it doesn't, you're doing it wrong. It should be a pig's breakfast. You can always fix it later, but you can't fix it if it's not on paper. And would I ever break into the big time? Yeah, I've written screenplays, but I've gotten zero traction in Hollywood, nothing whatsoever. If that ever happened, it would be absolute gravy. I would be over the moon. But you know what it's like? I think you can work really, really, really hard. You know the games at carnivals that are stuffed animals in a glass box and there's a hook that can lower down and grab one of the stuffed animals? You can work really, really hard to get into that box. You can be the best stuffed animal possible, but you don't control the hook. If it happens, it happens.
Yeah, you just got to keep giving them $5.
There you go.
Awesome. All right. DanaHaynesMystery.com is where you go to check out Dana Haynes' works. Chapter 13 is where I'm at right now in Sirocco. I plowed through his first in his new series, St. Nicholas Salvage and Wrecking. Just a lot of fun. Anything you want to add before we let you go and get back to your day job of editing the Portland Tribune?
Just that this has been a great deal of fun. I'm enjoying being with Blackstone. They're an awful, awful cool house to be with. They're great publishers. And I'm having as much fun as you can legally have.
That sounds good. And remember, support local. So Annie Bloom's Books is in Multnomah Village. That's not too far from where I am. And so I hit that place. And also Powell's Books. Any other great ways to consume your novels, Dana?
DanaHaynesMystery.com has got links to all of the other places you can get it. But man, I appreciate you supporting the local indie bookstores, because that's one thing most communities don't have is this rich, rich blend of indie bookstores that you and I have here in Oregon. We are so lucky. So support them, folks.
And then we'll go back and we'll read your other books as well. What's the title of your third book? Can you tell us?
The title of the third book is The Saint of Thieves.
Dana, beautiful stuff. I'm enjoying it, and it's good to be your friend and your colleague. Thank you so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure.
Yes, sir. That was one of the most fun interviews I've done in a very long time. Huge thanks to author Dana Haynes. Do yourself a favor if you do like fiction novels. Go to DanaHaynesMystery.com, hit your local independent bookstore, and enjoy. Big thanks once more to Dana Haynes, again, editor of the Portland Tribune and author, and listen for him on other current events every Thursday morning on Portland's Morning News. You have been listening to Beyond the Headlines, a behind-the-scenes look at some of this week's stories. You can follow me on Twitter, at Brett Recamp. And if you missed anything, the podcast is good to go at KXL.com. You can download any of our shows on iTunes or Google Play. Just search Beyond the Headlines KXL. We now have 368 shows for you to choose from. For Alpha Media USA in downtown Portland, I'm Brett Recamp on FM News 101.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Headlines, in-depth interviews on topics of concern here in Portland and the Northwest. This has been a special presentation of Alpha Media.